Charlie, you want to talk a little bit about this?
Sure.
For a number of years, we were doing our own research, and we were showing some very positive results. Like Candace said, one of the first communities we moved into, it was one of the worst communities in the entire country. We're talking about an area that's about a square mile or so, and they were having 50 to 60 shootings every single year. After a couple years of the ceasefire program, we were able to get those numbers down to between 10 and 20 per year. We were averaging 42% drops in our first six communities. So we were showing some impressive results with statistical significance when compared to control groups. And so thankfully, the National Institute of Justice recognized this, and they put a lot of money forward to help evaluate the program. It was a three-year evaluation. It covered four different types of statistical techniques, including time series analysis, which looked at the trends in shootings and killings over a period between 1991 and 2007, and it looked at how that trend shifted with the introduction of ceasefire. They also looked at how it shifted with the introduction of other programs such as PSN, and how that shifted after the ceasefire program was taken out of communities. They also looked at hotspot analysis, and they brought in somebody who's been doing hotspot analysis for a number of years, Dick Block. So they brought in some real experts that knew what they were looking at, knew what they were doing. They did a gang network analysis, looked at the relationships between gangs and how that changed with the ceasefire program. And then they did a number of surveys of community residents, of our clients, and they looked at what these attitudes were. And they found statistical significance in six of the seven communities. Now, that seventh community did have reductions in shootings, did have reductions in killings. We looked at a comparison zone. There were similar types of reductions. So we didn't find statistical significance, but we did have drops. And so the program could have had an influence in those areas, in the other areas as well. But six of the seven had statistical significant drops. And then there were also drops in, you know, looking at gang network homicides, retaliation homicides. There are drops in the concentration of shootings. This is an example of the analysis that Dick Block did. He looked at like the concentration of shootings in an area and how that changed over time. He looked at 2 years before, 2 years after. And what you can see here is on the far top, far left, are our treatment areas. Those are the areas where we initially had the program going. And on the four on the right and on the bottom, those are the control groups. And so visually, you could see that there's changes in the concentration of shootings. Dick Block looked at this statistically. He looked at what the actual numbers were, the concentrations, and he found significant, statistically significant results in four of the seven communities that he looked at. And when I say statistically significant results, it's good to keep in mind that the drops, overall drops that we're talking about were 41 to 73%. So beyond the statistical significance, we've seen huge drops in our communities that the ceasefire program was active in. The surveys that we did showed a number of things. They showed that 99% of the people, our clients, were reporting positive results. The participants were, you know, received help getting out of gangs, they received help getting jobs, they received help getting an education, advancing their lives. And the outreach workers were named as second only to parents as the most important adult in their life. The important thing to keep in mind with this is we are talking about not just your everyday person, we're talking about high-risk people, people that have met a criteria that they are likely to be involved in shootings, they're likely to be involved in violence. And these are people that are not being served generally by other programs. These are people that, you know, a lot of clergy programs, a lot of, you know, those are dealing with people that, you know, might be able to, they might be able to reach, but they might not be as high risk. We're dealing with people that are of a certain age group. We're dealing with people that were involved with shootings before, people that are actually in gangs and a lot of times have, you know, high roles in gangs or involved in illegal street activity. So we're dealing with a very high-risk group, and we're getting people saying that our outreach workers are serving as important mentors in their life, and they are serving as people that actually can get this behavior change message delivered to these people and make a change in their lives. But it's not just about behavior change. Behavior change is where it starts. Behavior change is where it happens. But once their behavior changes, these people need to make adjustments in their life, and the ceasefire outreach workers help them make those adjustments in their life. They get them out of a gang. They get them a job. They get them on the road to education. And what's important to keep in mind with this is these are people that a lot of times do not have any work experience. So they might be able to mentally make the change in their minds and be able to change their norms, but they don't know how to go into the workforce. They need help to know how to do a resume. They need help to know how to go into an interview and get a job. And they don't have that help from their parents. They don't have that help from other services that they don't know how to get these other services. You know, we're not necessarily giving them an education, but we're linking them up to the people that do give an education. Yeah?
You just started using the word, the outreach worker. Is that the same as the interrupter, or is that two different sets of people?
Those are two different sets of people. Outreach workers are comparable to like sort of a social service worker. They work individually with the clients. They have a caseload of at least the amount that we require them to have is 15 clients per outreach worker. Each of the people they deal with have to meet a certain criteria so that they are high risk people. So they're working day to day with people. A violence interrupter, he or she deals with an individual conflict. So they're not dealing with individual clients, but they deal with individual conflicts. So an example of that would be, we know a shooting took place. Somebody went to the hospital, and we heard about this person that got shot. A lot of times what happens when a person gets shot in the gang culture is there's going to be a retaliation. And there might be several retaliations. We send our violence interrupters out to that situation to talk one-on-one with those people involved in the conflict and talk the situation down. So the violence interrupters are doing basic conflict mediation type work. The outreach workers are doing more kind of social service type of one-on-one behavior change, norm change work with individual clients.
They'll also do mediations, but what we found in Chicago was that there was a need to kind of separate or at least create a specialization for someone who could do conflict resolution and mediation because of the nature of the gang violence, quite frankly. In Baltimore, they have one set of workers that are doing both, performing both functions. In other cities, you know, there may be a need to do some separation if another city implemented this, or it may be a single job description. So it's going to vary site to site. But what we found was that we just didn't have enough outreach workers who were well enough connected with some of our more active gangs in the city to be able to kind of wear both hats successfully.